Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, the post-Republican National Convention Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. David French of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have all bad martinis today. Let's not leave anyone in suspense. We've got so many promises in this speech. David, it was loud. It was long. I'll give Trump credit for one thing. He's pretty good at identifying the problems that people are worried about. I don't think we saw anything new that he had in terms of solutions or specifics. He may have already created some jobs, though, if there's such a thing as a down-volume remote control repair operator, because I had to do that literally five or six times last night because he just wouldn't stop shouting. I don't know if you had that same issue.
Oh, it was amazing. It was almost as if volume alone was going to solve our nation's problems. It was the equivalent of watching an all-caps tweeter going for about an hour plus.
It literally made it so exhausting. I think it would have been exhausting to watch him for an hour anyway, but that aspect of it was just withering. But let's get to so many different things here. We talked just a second ago about the fact that there was really nothing new in terms of details or specifics on how he would solve some of the big issues, like the economy, like immigration, like terrorism. He has offered some general remedies in the past, which he touched on again, but nothing that gives us any idea of exactly the course he would chart. But he did tout himself as the person who alone can solve our nation's problems. Here's just a couple of examples. First of all, the whole Washington system.
I have joined the political arena so that the powerful can no longer beat up on people who cannot defend themselves. Nobody knows the system better than me, which is why I alone can fix it.
He alone can fix it. He's also going to bring lots and lots of jobs to every state with a decent number of electoral votes.
I am going to bring back our jobs to Ohio and Pennsylvania and New York and Michigan and all of America. And I am not going to let companies move to other countries, firing their employees along the way without consequence. Not going to happen anymore.
I'm not exactly sure how he's quick going to pull that off, David. Throughout this speech, no reference to the Constitution, separation of powers, limited government, states and local people solving problems. It was authoritarianism across the board, and the people ate it up.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I kept getting the feeling that what I was watching wasn't so much a GOP convention, but like an old school Teamsters convention from the 1950s and 1960s, where the union boss stands up and declares that he's going to protect his people from the free market. He's going to protect his people from immigration. I mean, it was a remarkable moment. It was, you know, it reminded me a little bit in an interesting way of the Al Gore year 2000 speech, where it's the people versus the powerful,
right?
Where the solution was to just sort of change who was the powerful. And so long as the powerful was Donald Trump, well, then the people would prosper. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, this was not about empowering individuals or empowering families. It was all about empowering Donald Trump on behalf of individuals and families, that he was the solution. And the phrase that keeps running through my mind, I'm going to write about it. In fact, I'm writing about it right now, is the era of small government is over. If the solution to what ails our nation is just simply changing leadership and then trusting him to protect America not only from ISIS, but think about it, also from the free market. It's remarkable.
It is remarkable. I guess if you could sum up the speech in a lot of different ways, it's conservatives, it's been nice, we don't need you anymore and we don't want you anymore. As we head to the second martini, let's look at social issues. And this happened on a couple of different fronts, particularly as it related to the fight over the gay agenda. Peter Thiel is a pioneer in Silicon Valley. He gained fame in the past few months for bankrolling Hulk Hogan's lawsuit, a successful lawsuit against Gawker. He came to the stage last night, talked a lot about the economy and national security and his own story about growing up in Cleveland, but then he got to this.
Of course, every American has a unique identity. I am proud to be gay. I am proud to be a Republican. But most of all, I am proud to be an American. I don't pretend to agree with every plank in our party's platform, but fake culture wars only distract us from our economic decline. And nobody in this race is being honest about it except Donald Trump.
Fake culture wars. Keep that in the back of your mind as we go to Trump here from his speech talking about the Islamic attack in Orlando. The first statement he says here isn't too bad. I think most people would agree with it, although Trump has a little bit of difficulty with his alphabet. But then he like pats the Republicans on the heads for not wanting gays to be murdered. Listen to this.
As your president, I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens from the violence and oppression of a hateful foreign ideology. And I have to say, as a Republican, it is so nice to hear you cheering for what I just said. Thank you.
So, David, the only thing he mentioned that religious conservatives might like to hear is that he wants to protect churches against a speech that might cost them their tax-exempt status, which I'm pretty sure is about 250th on the list of evangelical concerns. Nothing about conscience, nothing about forcing people to cater to gay weddings. A conscience, you know, in a year, just a year after the Supreme Court decision, freedom of speech, freedom of exercise of religion is under assault, and he didn't even go there.
Well, and never mind that he didn't even mention abortion or the fight for life
right.
at all. You know, and this notion about fake culture wars and nobody caring about who uses what restroom, that neglects to mention that the aggressor, the instigator here, is the Obama administration. So if anyone needs to hear about fake culture wars, it would be the Obama administration, which has launched this incredibly aggressive nationwide legal effort to force all of the American educational system to comply with a really radical agenda. There's nothing fake about that. That actually exists, and it's actually being driven by the other side. This is kind of a trick that's often used by progressives. The pattern is, I'm going to change American society the way I want to. And if you disagree with me, why are you obsessing about sex? why are you obsessing about abortion? Why are you obsessing over the culture wars? Just let me do what I want to do. The side that's obsessing is the side that's seeking to change American culture and American society. And there's no recognition of that. And it really is remarkable what we saw here, which is essentially turning the Republican convention into a cheerleading section for people declaring their LGBTQ identity. I mean, that's a new thing here. And that, I think what that tells religious conservatives is, look, we're turning our back on you. You should just be thankful for whatever crumbs we throw your way that may or may not be a little tastier than the crumbs Hillary Clinton will give you.
Is this essentially an unconditional surrender in the culture war by the Republican Party?
Certainly by the Trump wing of the Republican Party. I mean, I if you're a Christian conservative, if you're a social conservative, all that you're left with after this speech is the hope that maybe, just maybe, he might appoint some judges who will be better than what Hillary Clinton will appoint. And that's the last shred of hope you're clinging to, because he has declared loudly and clearly that he doesn't really care about all this stuff that much. It's not on his mind. It's his one throwaway reference to the Johnson Amendment. You said it right. I mean, I do think that the Johnson Amendment is an attack on free speech, but it's 250th at best. In the ranking of religious liberty concerns here in the United States.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And the fact that the Republican Party goes right along with it. Ever since the polls shifted on marriage, they've pretty much given up on that issue. They've kept up the fight to some extent on abortion. But you got to wonder how Mike Pence is feeling. The speech the night before, other than his references to how wonderful of a president Trump would be, gave you some hope that there would be some rationality and competence if, in fact, this administration gets elected. But you got to wonder what he was thinking as he listened to all that last night.
Well, and for all of those people who say that, well, you know, Trump's going to bring on these competent conservatives who will guide him and direct him in policy. Let's not forget that the first thing that he always does this, is whenever somebody endorses him and comes along with him, he'll do something to humiliate them, to just let them know that he's in charge. I mean, that 60 Minutes interview where he's speaking over Mike Pence, where the introduction of Mike Pence, where he talks for about 30 straight minutes only about himself, Mike Pence standing behind him in the background. All of this is sending a message, just like he sent to Chris Christie, one of his early endorsers, is fetch my McDonald's. That's what you're here to do. You're here to help me. And all of these Republicans who tell me, well, he's just going to surround himself with these great conservatives, and he'll humiliate them, and he'll continually humiliate them throughout his entire administration, if such an administration occurs.
Let's move on to the last bad martini, and this one's on the economy. We're going to have two clips here, neither of which are actually from Donald. They're from his daughter, Ivanka, who was being roundly lauded on Fox News and elsewhere following her introduction of her father. Trump's speech itself certainly talked a lot about trade and had protectionism themes going through there, and I think a lot of people are going to be surprised if he actually does back out of these things. David, how much things are going to suddenly cost at Walmart and beyond, but that might be a conversation for another day. Ivanka Trump, very polished, very smooth, comes right out of the gate and says, yeah, I'm not a Republican. I just do what I think is best. Then she got on to issues related to working women. And for every Republican who has tried to beat down this myth for the past number of years, this had to be a pretty depressing moment. Here's a couple of clips from Ivanka Trump.
In 2014, women made 83 cents for every dollar earned by a man. Single women without children earn 94 cents for each dollar earned by a man, whereas married mothers made only 77 cents. Politicians talk about wage equality, but my father has made it a practice at his company throughout his entire career. He will fight for equal pay, for equal work, and I will fight for this too, right alongside of him.
David, if you just saw a transcript of that last week and someone said, this will be said at one of the conventions in the next 2 weeks, which one do you think it will be? I'm pretty sure we all would have said the Democrats in Philly.
Absolutely. Here we have a GOP convention cheering these ridiculous debunked statistics about inequality in pay. There is a reason that, first, it's already against the law to deprive a person of equal pay merely because of their gender. The reason there's a disparity is because women, particularly married women, choose jobs that tend to give more flexibility and more time away from work, and choose jobs that tend to pay less. They're making choices, as is their right, and this is what happens in a free economy. They're making choices that result in slightly lower wages. That's just what happens. But if she's talking about Donald Trump being someone who's going to end this, then she's talking about Donald Trump intruding into the economy every bit as aggressively as an Elizabeth Warren or a Hillary Clinton would. Again, you're exactly right. It's just stunning to hear this at a GOP convention to thunderous roars. It reminds me of what Ted Cruz said. These people are cheering now for a red jersey over a blue jersey, not for principles.
I was just going to ask you, after Donald Trump argues for an even stronger executive, surrenders on the culture war, and puts forward that sort of economic argument through his daughter, how do you think Ted Cruz is feeling after all the backlash? He's probably feeling pretty good today.
Well, I think he's feeling vindicated on principle, and like many of us who care about the Constitution and conservative principles, we're feeling depressed, more depressed than vindicated, because what that says is that years and years and years of speaking loudly and clearly about conservative principles and the benefit that they provide to the American people and to the American nation has fallen on an awful lot of deaf ears, that there are an awful lot of people who are in this not for the principle, not because they were convinced of the party's ideals or ideas, but, you know, they're in it for the power. They're in it for the excitement, for the prestige. As Cruz said, it's almost like you're rooting for laundry at this point. Is it the red jersey or is it the blue jersey that's going to win? And they're for the red jersey because with the red jersey comes their jobs, their perks, their power, their ability to point at the scoreboard and declare victory. But, you know, look, I mean, it's pretty clear after the convention speech, it's Democrat versus Democrat for the president of the United States. Is it going to be an old school Teamster Democrat or a new school university progressive? And that's the choice America has.
That is truly, truly depressing. And as we've established, this convention, I think, did very little, if anything, might have even pushed more conservatives away who were desperately looking for a reason to vote for Trump, if only to stop Hillary Clinton. I don't think they got much from this week. Overall, do you think Trump helped himself from the week?
I think he will get a small bounce from this just because he will, you know, he will have been front and center. He will have been dominating the conversation. There will be people who resonate with his message and like his message. It's pretty hard not to get a bounce from a convention. It would be virtually unprecedented. But Hillary's going to announce her vice presidential pick any time now. Then her convention comes. We'll see where it is about 1 to 2 weeks after the Democratic convention when things settle out a bit. My prediction is you're going to see polling that looks an awful lot like Obama-McCain 2008. And if that's what we're looking at a GOP loss at least as big as McCain's loss, if not bigger.
Wow. On that optimistic note, David, you'll be back with us. That's the good news. That's a good martini on Monday. And by then, I'm sure we will know Hillary Clinton's vice presidential nominee. And we'll probably talk about that as well as other things as the Democrats get going on their convention. Thanks so much for being with us today and have a great weekend.
Well, thanks for having me. And hopefully maybe we can actually have a good martini on Monday.
Keep your fingers crossed. David French of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us and join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.